All right, back on the record, November 18th, 2024, 10:45 a.m. I'm Phil Albrecht, hearing examiner. This is PLN 22-02653, Administrative Arborwood Appeal. Ms. Koski is still in cross-examination of Dr. Cook. Go ahead, Ms. Koski.
Dr. Cook is not in here yet, nor is Mr. Oh, there's Mr. Telligen.
All right.
All right, promoting Dr. Cook to a panelist right now.
There she is. Okay, welcome back, Dr. Cook and Ms. Koski, go ahead.
Hi, Dr. Cook. right before we broke, Commissioner Olbrechts asked you a question about whether hydrology, such extensive hydrology examination is required to look at the small portion of fill that is being proposed. And I think in response to that, you said that the buffer width here is 45 feet. Is that correct? Did I hear that correctly?
I need to explain that that's coming from Joanna Bartlett's report that she said she's not going to update. I do know that in the latest plan sets it's 100 feet, but unless Ms. Bartlett updates her report, what she's documented is that it's 85 feet and with an additional 40 foot decrease. So that obviously needs to be updated in order to, so that all the documents in the file are consistent.
Okay, so I'm going to pull up exhibit F1, which is the CABER. That was the revised CABER that was done, the supplemental CABER that was done. Okay.
So it's 100 feet with the side slope that's still compacted, which reduces it about 15 feet. So it's down to about 85 feet.
Okay, so here we have, I'm just going to pull the language straight out of the CABER for you. Highlight it right here at the bottom, that 100 feet from the to a location that is 117 feet east of wetland P2. So would you agree that the current buffer is 117 feet after the relocation of the road?
To the edge of the road?
Yeah.
Okay, so then you got to add the path that's also to the left of the road.
Okay, so here...
It's 100 feet with another 15 feet of compacted till.
So the fill that is being proposed is within the buffer. And that's what we're talking about, is whether that is a temporary or permanent impact. So that, and we'll get to that a little bit later in some of your testimony on that. But until we get to that baseline, would you agree that the buffer is 117 feet?
No, again, I don't agree to that. I don't think that's what you're showing. You've got another path on the other side of the road, as well as that compacted till.
Okay, so you disagree with the CABER, and that's fine.
So it's 117 feet to the edge of the road. I do agree that that's what the plan set is showing, but I don't agree that that's the extent of the encroachment.
Okay, and so then I'm also going to draw your attention to the last sentence here, which actually goes on to page 20 of exhibit F1. Do you see this says Taylor Morrison will submit design and construction level detail plans to the county as part of a separate site development activity permit resubmittals and future applications? Do you see that language?
Yes.
Is that your understanding of how the county's process works for this development?
Yes, that's what they've been doing.
You just disagree that that's the best process. Is that accurate?
I don't see how the county can approve a permit with the trust that we'll do it correctly. I don't think that's the correct way to do business. And most other jurisdictions don't do it that way, but that's how Kitsap is doing it.
Okay. Now I'm going to pull up exhibit A9, which is the Radke report. I'll pull up the first page. You can see it there. Do you recognize this document?
Actually, I didn't have it ahead of time, but I am aware that they did one in 2007, yes.
Okay, so let me clarify then. I thought I understood you on Friday to say that one of the reasons you thought there was surface flow was that it had been represented in the Reiki report. Is that accurate, or did you not say that, or is that not your understanding?
I saw that photo and just assumed there was surface flow. And the fact that I knew that Radke had stated that wetland P2 was a partial flow through riverine system, that there would be surface flow.
So I'm going to take you, here we are with the delineation that Radke did. And orient ourselves here. Do you see this kind of to the left-hand side where it says wetland P2?
Yes.
And do you agree that that's where wetland P2 is?
That looks the same as in Joanna's report, yes.
Okay, and I'm gonna take your attention over here to the legend on the right-hand side that says existing streams. Do you see existing streams are marked with those arrows?
Yes.
And I'm going to zoom in here so we can get a good look at that P2. Do you see where that's the line of arrows? And it is a little hard to see because it goes across the dark part, but do you see kind of where it starts?
Yes.
Maybe it starts up here, but does it go, is it coming from above wetland P2 or does it start within or below wetland P2?
Oh, no, it shows that it's within wetland P2.
Okay. We're going to talk now about your testimony on monitoring and the need for monitoring. On Friday, you testified about the need to monitor impacts to wetlands. And I'm going to stop sharing this for the time being.
Yes.
Okay. So, and I just want to kind of clarify a couple of things with you and then talk about monitoring in particular. So are you aware that the question on remand in this case was whether impacts to wetland buffers were temporary or permanent based on construction of the proposed fill and its ability to mimic pre-development conditions, that the purpose of that analysis and the CABR is to help ensure the buffer continues to protect the wetland?
Yes.
So, in your opinion, what is a temporary impact to a buffer?
You're not going to like my answer. All through the testimony that was given by Mr. Wright, Ms. Bartlett, and Mr. Heacock, they're talking about impacts that are not, don't meet the definition in county code for temporary, which is a 0 to 1 year total term, even for extended temporary impacts, which can go up to 2 years. None of the impacts that they're talking about are going to be within that time frame. They're all going to last much longer in that compacted fill area.
Then what?
Because
part
the compacted.
What part of the
Sorry,
county
go ahead.
Code are you pulling that definition from?
I'm pulling it from Ms. Bartlett's exhibit. She pulled it from, that's A7, no, that's her report. Well, she talks about A75 and A89, which are the Department of Ecology's buffer report, where they talk about the difference between temporary and permanent impacts.
Okay, so
you're
temporary
not talking impact.
Go ahead.
Are mentioning only acreage, not the buffer. Oh, and another thing too is that in Ms. Bartlett's report, she's talking about acreage of buffer impacts and also not buffer widths. And most of her exhibits within the report have arrows that are diagonal, which make them look like they're longer than directly to the shortest point between wetland P2 and areas that are just adjacent, which is the road and the hill slope. So that's another thing. But temporary impacts, let me, I see, I pulled a, pulled it. Exhibit B17, oh, the area compact is no mention of, oh, and also the fact that nowhere in Ms. Bartlett's mitigation report, which is exhibit A22, does she talk about deconsolidation of the area that she's proposing to plant, and she also proposes to plant only only 4 to 6 inches, place 4 to 6 inches of topsoil on top. So the slope is going to be compacted, and then she's going to put 4 to 6 inches of fill on top, which means of the 2 feet that we as wetland ecologists consider ecologically significant, 1/4 of that is going to be deconsolidated, and 3/4 is going to be consolidated or compacted. So I talked about the repercussions of trying to do a planting pit within compacted till. What happens if they do fine for the first couple of years, and then down the road, right, all of a sudden you have a mass die-off because of that pot effect. The roots have nowhere to go.
Okay.
So that's not a temporary impact. Okay. The compacting is not a temporary impact. The lack of consideration of the hydrologic function of the buffer is not a temporary impact. The loss of acreage is not a temporary impact. That's a, you know, that whole table that Mr. Telegin brought up before still applies. So not, you know, it's a discrepancy between what they're saying is a temporary impact and what in reality and from a scientific definition is a temporary impact are two different things.
Okay. So what I hear you saying is you're not getting that definition from the county code. It sounds like it's a definition that's based on your own personal and professional experience and knowledge.
No, Ms. Bartlett in her report goes over the definition of the site's code, but then doesn't comply with it. So I'm using county code definition from her own report.
Okay. So in your... So in your opinion, is it possible to install fill in a buffer in a way that would be a temporary impact?
Yes, if you deconsolidate it.
What is that?
Prior to plant. It means you do what they were calling ripping, which means you go through and you fluff up the soil again after you've compacted it. It's not perfect, but you know, plants will grow because you're lacking soil structure and it alters the soil chemistry and it often kills the soil microbiota, which helps with nutrient cycling. But it's a lot better if you compact it, they do not do well.
So it sounds
to
like
the
what
point
it
where
to. It sounds like what it comes down to is if you put the fill in a way where the plants can grow, that would be a temporary impact. If you're putting the plants in a
or
way where they're like
plants.
Where they can't grow and the roots can't get the nutrients and plants die, then that would not be a permanent, that would not be a temporary impact.
For plants, we're not, then you get into the whole hydrology, loss of hydrology function. And that, I don't understand why at the first hearing, but that is still not addressed and that can't be addressed. Unless the road design is correct.
Okay.
So we're not just talking that one little side slope underneath the path and the continuation down the slope. We're talking the whole road issue and loss of half of the drainage buffer of that, half the drainage of that sub-basin.
Okay. And what are the hydrology criteria that apply to buffers?
I don't understand your question. What do you mean criteria?
Okay. I thought you said that one test is if the plants grow, but even if the plants are growing, you still have to have the hydrology. You have to like have the hydrology function of the buffer. So I'm trying, are there criteria? What are the criteria for hydrology of the buffer?
Maintenance of the same flow pre-development, post-development as is occurring pre-development. And if you're going to block off half of the acreage for which precipitation falls and goes to interflow, then that's not a temporary impact. That function for hydrology is missing half of its surface area and drainage area.
Okay, so it sounds like you're saying there's two things. You got to have the plants grow and you can't have the road block the water. Is that fair? If the plants
yeah.
grow and the water gets past the road, then the buffer would function. It would still be a functioning buffer, in your opinion.
And you also need to do water quality functions too, because again, you're going to be missing half the acreage where that could be performed. So there's got to be something done with water quality for half of the water that would make it under the road and reach the wetland, because it's going to be drained. Some of it potentially will be draining off the development. And so the water quality will not be just rainfall quality. So yeah, I mean,
those criteria that you're talking about, that's coming from your professional experience, or is that listed out somewhere?
Yes, that's coming from my professional experience of monitoring all of these things post-development. Because I personally never do a buffer design, compensation mitigation plan without monitoring a wetland. It always, every time, all these years I've been doing this, I always monitor the wetland to make sure that the impacts to the buffer are not affecting the wetland. So the monitoring occurs both in the buffer for the plants and in the wetland to make sure that the wetland is carrying on. And it's not just natural maturation processes that are occurring in the wetland. There's no degradation. There's no dewatering. There's no overwatering. And things are progressing.
Did you hear testimony from Mr. Wright and Ms. Bartlett that impacts to a wetland buffer do not necessarily mean impacts to a wetland? Did you hear that testimony?
I did.
Do you agree with that or no?
I think it depends on what, every project is different. You can have projects where impacts to the buffer do not impact the wetland, but that's, you know, again, what I'm stating here professionally, I disagree with that on this particular project. And I think it needs to be addressed, especially when you're proposing a buffer reduction of at least a half of the recommended buffer width.
So you testified that to adequately assess the temporary nature of a buffer impact, you would need to know pre-development conditions of the wetland. And I think you said that again today. And I think you said it on Friday and today. Am I understanding that correctly?
Or yeah, for hydrology.
Okay.
Yes.
So, and I think you said that's when you were talking, like you need to know like in the wetland itself. So based on what we reviewed so far in this cross-examination, you are now aware that the prior hearing examiner concluded that assessment of groundwater hydrology is not necessary to assess the effectiveness of the wetland buffer. You're aware that that was what the last hearing examiner found. It sounds like
yes,
you probably disagree with that, but you recognize that that's the finding. Okay. You're also aware, based on what we've talked about during this cross-examination, and we looked at, remember, exhibit B17 and those red crosses that were in the wetland that represented that hydrology is being tested and that testing is ongoing within the wetland. And you're aware of that, that has occurred and that is ongoing. Remember, we looked at how they're monitoring the daily rainfall and impacts on shallow water versus deep water.
And so far data's been collected in August, the end of August, September and October, yes.
Okay.
One quarter of a year.
Okay. And so would you agree then that testing is happening now? So that would be monitoring of pre-development conditions?
That's monitoring one quarter of pre-development conditions.
And you also testified to the photographs that we were just talking about that were taken of the wetland. Do those photographs represent pre-development conditions? Would you agree?
Yes.
And you saw Mr. Koger's analysis of the wetland current hydrology. And I think we just talked about all of his logs. And you agree that that's all reflecting pre-development conditions?
To start with, I need to bring up that Mr. Kroger's work all identified that it was a conceptual hydrologic plan and that it was a preliminary hydrologic plan. So he even recognized that he only had one spot data from an entire calendar year. And again, it was taken during the dry season. So yeah, I mean, I don't disagree that he collected data in August of and then did some hydrology monitoring with the well monitors for September and October, but it's preliminary and it's not monitoring. It's for pre-development. It's a single data collection in time, and it's not doesn't meet the definition of pre-development monitoring.
Okay, and I'm going to pull up Exhibit F1, again, which is the CABR again. We're going to look at that. I'm looking at page 63 of Exhibit F1. These are the conditions in the CABR. And I'm going to draw your attention to condition 19. And I'll just read it out loud because it's not kind of hard to read on the screen. Upon successful completion of the required plantings, restoration work, monitoring, and maintenance conditions and actions, and completion of associated bonds, a homeowners association or the developer will be required to maintain buffers, open space tracts, landscaping, and critical area protections. Were you aware that was a condition of the CABR?
Yeah, and you should notice those last three words, and critical area protections.
Correct. What does that mean to
that
you?
That pulls in the wetland. The critical area is the wetland. And so you need to maintain the protection. And in order to be sure that you're maintaining those protections, you have to make sure that the wetland's not being degraded.
Right. But and so you understand that doing that is a condition of the CABR.
Yes. But it's not in Joanna Bartlett's report. There is no monitoring in the wetland proposed.
Okay, so now I'm going to bring you up to page 58 of the same document. This is taken from the CABR again. Do you see this is titled monitoring plan?
Yes.
And that first sentence, the buffer restoration areas will be monitored annually for a 5-year period following plant installation, and monitoring reports will be submitted to the county. Were you aware that monitoring plan is included in the CABR?
Yes.
Were you aware that the monitoring...
Again, it doesn't include wetlands, and it's only for monitoring vegetation. It's not for monitoring anything else.
So what else do you think needs to be monitored in to make sure that the buffer is functioning? I thought we said it was vegetation and that the water's not damming at the road.
And the water's not what? I'm sorry.
Damming at the road. I thought those were the two things that you said we needed to have.
No. It's for the buffer. And then in the wetland, you need to monitor the vegetation and the hydrology. And I would, you know, just at least for the first year or two, I would also make sure they monitored water quality being discharged from that overflow area. I guess it's... Is that north of the wetland, the overflow with the Gavin?
Okay. Were you aware that the monitoring plan also has a contingency plan that's required as part of the CABR? I'm just going to read part of this to you, that if the performance standards are not being met during the 5-year monitoring period, contingency measures will be implemented to achieve the standard by the next monitoring season. And you see down below, this also includes the ability of that period to be extended as necessary?
Yes, but she's only identifying vegetation contingencies.
In the buffer, well, this is a buffer. I mean, this is a critical area buffer reduction. We're just talking about the buffer in the CABR. We're talking about whether the buffer is
Well,
mimicking.
you're not because it says you have to maintain protections for the critical areas. So although it's only addressing the buffer, it's not talking, you know, it implies that it should also include the wetland. Because after all, that's what you're protecting. That's what the buffer does. It protects the wetland.
Right. So
the whole point of this is to protect the wetland.
Right. That's the whole point of the buffer. And here's the monitoring plan to make sure that the buffer maintains vegetation and that it's mimicking pre-development buffer protections, like as a critical area protection area. And you agree that that's the purpose of this monitoring plan and its contingency plan?
No, I think it's deficient because it's not addressing what you actually are protecting, which is the wetland. So if by just having these components, you're not going to pick up if the wetland is being impacted. Unless you're monitoring the wetland, there's no way of knowing if this project is going to impact the wetland. Code requires wetland protection.
Like with those wells that are in the wetland right now, is that getting at what you would like to see?
It's a start, yes. But also monitoring the vegetation community to make sure it's not, excuse me, it's not changing drastically and very quickly as a result of changing the hydrologic regime.
Well, I mean, when you're talking about you're saying the vegetative monitoring will document the developing native vegetation buffer within the mitigation area. And so you understand that the purpose of this limited remand was to ensure that the fill that's being placed in the buffer mimics pre-development conditions, and that to assess the fill, this is what's being recommended as making sure it functions like the fill that was, like what's there now, this fill is going to be constructed in a way that mimics those pre-development conditions. And that's the purpose of this. Would you agree that that's the purpose of the CABR and this monitoring plan?
No, I disagree that that's the purpose of the CABR. I do agree that that's all that they're addressing in this monitoring plan. And I'm saying that it's deficient with what the CABR identifies, which is protecting the wetland. You have under this monitoring plan, you have no idea if this development is going to impact that wetland because you're not looking at the wetland. The wetland could be completely failing as a result of this development, and you'd never know from what's being proposed here to be monitored.
Okay.
And I don't understand why the county didn't pick this up, but they didn't, because again, Mr. Heacock says he trusts the consultants, the experts, but they didn't pick up on it, and they should have. It should have been a condition of this report was to monitor the wetlands, and they're not proposing it. So this project could completely fail the wetland, and under this monitoring, you would never know, other than the neighbors complaining. But by then, it's too late because it's not a requirement.
Okay. Well, we talked earlier, we started with the CABR, we're still with the CABR. And we talked about how that road moved, right? That was like what happened, right? The road moved to provide a bigger buffer for the wetland. So would you say that in moving that road over, that was an effort to minimize those impacts to the buffer? Do you agree with that?
Oh, you mean moving it the what is that, 15 feet, 20 feet? It certainly will help a little, but it's still, what about the other almost 100 feet that are being lost to that sub drainage? So no, I don't agree. I mean, it certainly helped, but I don't think it, the Decker report and Mr. Kroger's report were attempts to satisfy the hearing examiner's requirement for showing that hydrology was not going to be impacted. But I don't think either of those reports, at least how you showed them, are proving that point. And in fact, Mr. Kroger's hand-drawn figures that he displayed actively show that that unless they change the road design in a way that's documented so we can look at it, that they're not going to stop the impact to the interflow. So no, I don't think that this is achieving what was remanded.
Okay. And I think you said you'd looked at Ms. Bartlett's on the mitigation plan A22, but are you aware that A22 is not her current, because it's not the supplemental report? Have you reviewed her supplemental report?
That's the September 22.
Yeah.
Yes, that's, as far as I know, that's what's in the file as the most current.
Okay.
That's what I'm looking at here.
Okay, I'm gonna go to exhibit F4. Which is the VESI code. Page, oops. 63. I'm gonna go to page 63. Oh, nope, that's the wrong, I'm looking at my wrong notes here. At 72, I'm gonna go to 72. There's been a lot of testimony about this section. Are you familiar with it? Called what?
Yes.
Mitigation report?
Yeah, I skimmed it recently.
Are you aware of anywhere in this provision that requires the kind of analysis? Like when you're talking about analysis of impacts on habitat function, water quality, and hydrology, are you aware of anything in this provision that requires that for a buffer?
Well, code in a different section requires no impacts post-development to wetland functions. They have to be maintained at either equivalent or better. And so in your mitigation report, you're required to comply with that in order to maintain those functions at current or better performance. So that's just implied from other parts of the code.
Okay. And here I'm pulling up, let's see. Let's find it. Minimum development standards, I think is what we're looking at. Yeah, okay. This is 19.200.225, which was an alternative basis that the county relied on with the road placement. And I want to draw your attention to subsection D and bring your attention down to D4. And you testified about the need for the mitigation plan, which we've been discussing. You're aware that there's a condition in the CABR that you think is insufficient, but that it exists. Are you also aware of this provision in the county code that requires mitigation to be performed in accordance with the specific project mitigation plan's requirements?
Yes.
So do you, I think you testified on Friday that there wouldn't be mitigation, but you agree that there will be mitigation on this project and that it will be, there's a contingency plan in place and it's required by the code and it's required by the CABR.
I agree that there's been limited mitigation proposed, which is simply planting the side slopes. But again, there's problems with the mitigation that's proposed. There's no deconsolidation of the soil proposed, and the road design is, other than what's been discussed verbally, from what's been documented, there's no mitigation for the hydrologic function. Or actually, when it comes down to it, the water quality function. So, so I will agree that, and usually I'll also mention that the contingencies are very broad and general and not specific. And I know it's hard to give specifics until something bad has happened, but you usually say contingencies will be performed. They could include, we expect the following could be things that could happen as a result of this particular project. And you'll say dewatering of the wetland, excessive discharge of water during high volume storm events that swamp the upper lobe of wetland P2, mortality of the vegetation result as a result of planting in consolidated planting pits and so on. And so it doesn't include sufficient detail to really adequately protect the wetland resource.
Okay, so a follow up
so no,
to what
I would disagree.
You mentioned dewatering. What does dewatering mean to you?
It means that wetland P2 will receive less water than it does pre-development, and it will eventually over time convert to less wetland area or fail to remain a wetland. It will convert to an upland status over time.
Okay, but you agree, and we talked about this earlier, that the primary sources of hydrology to the wetland come from groundwater. That is constant. That
no,
was picked up in the driest
I did planet. Not say that, nor do I agree with that statement.
Oh,
I don't. We don't know.
Okay,
we don't know.
We don't know. But we do know that the surface interflow, surface water is seasonal. So that's not, and we do know that the groundwater is constant. It was there in the driest seasons, and it's constantly providing water to the wetland. Is that accurate? Do you agree with that?
Yeah, but you're failing to understand how wetland ecology works for these slope systems in the Pacific Northwest. They often have almost no hydrology and often almost dry out completely for August and September. And that does not affect their status as being wetland.
Okay.
So the lack of there being interflow at that time of year has no bearing on whether or not this is a wetland or remains a wetland.
Right, but the fact that we now know, based on this hydrological assessment that Taylor Morse is undertaking, that wetland P2 has constant source of hydrology through groundwater, it's not going to dry up and become a dust bowl.
We don't know that it's sufficient to keep that wetland hydrated throughout the calendar year, because they monitored for the end of August and September and October, at which point the plants have already died back for the season. So you cannot state that. And we don't know how much percentage of contribution that deeper groundwater is giving. So no, you can't make that statement. I do not know that for a fact that it won't dry up, because it could be a small percentage supplying just the bottom portion of wetland P2.
Oh,
so the actual acreage of wetland P2 could reduce if you don't have interflow and surface flow contributions.
But didn't
so I don't know that. Can't say that. I don't.
Okay,
we don't have data.
But we did see that the upper groundwater sees daylight above P2, and you agreed that that could provide join the interflow, the subsurface interflow area, and that groundwater is there during the driest times of the year. So constant source of hydrology.
No. It could be a source of hydrology, but is it sufficient? I don't know that. And especially since, again, you're picking 1 month. The data comes from, 2 months. Okay. A sixth of the year. You don't know what's going on, especially during the active part of the growing season, because the end of August is kind of the in the first 2 weeks of September, the tail end of the growing season. And by then, that wetland could already be adapted to being dried out at that time of year. So it wouldn't impact it. But you don't know what's going on over the other 10 months of the year, 9 to 10 months of the year. And no, so I cannot state that. We don't have the data. It could turn out that aquifer supplies a large percentage, those two, the shallower of the two groundwaters. Aquifers do supply a sufficient amount to maintain the hydrology, but what I'm telling you is that we do not know, and all we've been asking is that be done, and also that the road be redesigned should it become clear that the interflow and the surface flows do afford a large percentage of the contribution of hydrology to wetland P2.
Okay.
That's so what we're asking for. That's all we're asking for, is that it be looked at so that 4 years down the road, wetland P2 either isn't highly degraded because it's been dewatered, or it goes away completely. That's all we're asking.
Okay. No further questions.
Okay. Mr. Getchess, any questions?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, great. Now let's just see if the exhibits work for me. I will ask a few questions. Let's share the screen and go to. Okay, Dr. Cook, are you able to see my screen?
Yes.
Okay, and you already covered some of this already, but I thought that when you were talking about before, when Mr. Tillagen was asking you questions, that you were concerned that that the revegetation wouldn't be monitored long enough, that 3 years wouldn't be long enough. And I thought, well, I'm going to ask her if she knows it's going to be longer than 3 years. And it sounds like you covered that a little bit already. This is just another paragraph of. You looked at two or three already that talks about the 5 years. Is that new to you, or did you think it was 3 years,
no.
or did you not know how long it was going to
no,
be?
No, I said some jurisdictions are 3 years and some are as much as 5 years. But I will again remind you that oftentimes that mass dieback occurs in the end of year four, beginning of year five. So what do you do if you're at the end of your monitoring period and you've had a mass die-off? I mean, I've had this happen, and then you've got to replant. And so then your monitoring is extended out another 1 to 2 to 3 years. So, yeah. And if they die back, what are you going to do? Rip the whole slope at that point and replant it? And, you know, it's a nightmare. You don't want this to play out this way. You want to set it up right at the get-go so that you're not going to have this happen. And if you have an inkling that this could happen, it behooves everybody to do it correctly by deconsolidating the soil, et cetera, up front and not have to fix it after it fails. It's so much more expensive to have to retrofit something than it is to just do it correctly up front.
I think they mentioned bonds, associated bonds, like performance bonds in one of the paragraphs too. This is F1, it's PDF page 50, but one of the other paragraphs that and F1, this contains the revised CABR decision. So that's where this is coming from, but in your experience, there's often, and in this case, there's going to be performance bonds as well.
Always, there's almost always in every jurisdiction, there's a performance bond. I will also tell you that with the increased cost of things, the performance bond, should a project fail and the developer walk away because they're allowed to because they've placed the performance bond doesn't cover the cost of fixing something.
So what you're recommending is more topsoil than 4 to 6 and fluffing up or is that the same thing? Are they two different things, or is it the same thing?
They're like, two different things.
More than 4 to 6. How many inches of topsoil are you recommending?
I usually recommend a minimum of 1 foot to 18 inches, and that's what Chris Wright also recommends. But the planting pits themselves, usually if you're planting 1 gallon, which is what Miss Bartlett specified, your planting pit is 2 feet wide by 2 feet deep. And so that whole planting pit gets amended, and then the rest of the area would get a foot of topsoil, and then you'd mulch around the plantings.
But as far as the fluffing up, how far down does that have to go?
2 feet, absolutely, at least 2 feet. Yeah,
2 feet, but like starting where the topsoil stops, like you go down, and when you get to the bottom of the topsoil, then you fluff down another 2 feet.
Yeah, you do it before you add the topsoil.
All right, let's look at another. Okay.
Because remember the woody species, especially trees, and they're proposing a lot of trees in this area. They're going to send their roots down more than the 2 feet. If you've ever looked at a blowdown, you'll see that the roots of a tree, unless it hits groundwater, go down 3-4 feet, sometimes even deeper.
Right, so do you see my screen now?
Yes.
Okay, this is A60 again, and is it your understanding this is a photo of wetland P2?
Yes, no, it's the buffer that feeds to wetland P2.
Oh, down to P2.
Yeah.
Okay. What, I guess I do have one question about this anyway, even if this isn't P2. What is your theory on why there's all this vegetation here, but not here?
That water's flowing there, down through there.
So it just springs up like an artesian well right here, and then like right beyond it, there's all this vegetation?
Yeah, I mean, that could be where that shallower aquifer discharges to the surface that I was asked about earlier. This could be at that approximate location.
Okay, so that's not totally ecologically significant then, or too far down to be considered ecologically significant if it's actually becoming surface water where it exits right before it gets to P2, right? Or
I'm
if
sorry,
not surface
not...
water, then in the very top layers of the existing soil.
You said it's not ecologically significant?
No, I thought you said that of the different sources of water, you acknowledge there were at least three different sources of water to P2, but that the ecologically significant source was the colluvium, alluvium, the very top layer that hadn't been looked at closely enough. Is that right?
Right. So we don't know, I have no idea what's formed this feature.
But that's what I wanted to ask you about was why you're labeling that. I mean, aren't they all ecologically significant? I mean, can you really say, especially in the dry period in the summer, why would you call that the most ecologically, it wouldn't be the most ecologically significant during that time, right?
No, I use that term with respect to the depth in the soil that we're looking at that is significant to the plant growth and actually the critters is the top 2 feet. I wasn't talking about a particular flow being ecologically significant with respect
to
the
groundwater. Okay, so I'll just
the
ask
you
then. They're all there. I mean, if there's more than
all
one
water
source,
is important.
There you go.
Yeah,
That's what
all
I was trying to
get
important.
At,
because it made it sound to me when you were testifying before, you only considered one of them ecologically significant, and it was the one that they didn't look at very closely. But they're all ecologically significant.
No, that's not what I said. What I said was the top 2 feet is the portion of the soil profile that's ecologically significant to the plants that are growing in it. And you've only collected data on the driest time of the year of one of the three sources of hydrology that feed the wetland. So we don't know anything about the current flow, surface flows, how much there is, how much it contributes, nor that interflow. We do not know. This gully could be a result of the interflow that comes from uphill and emerges at this elevation and then becomes surface flow down to wetland P2, but we don't know. So that's the
if that
point
was true,
that
like
I'm making.
If
you
that's,
don't know
if that's
what's
what you
created
can,
this feature.
No, I understand. But if that's actually correct, if that's then that would mean that the if that was happening, then that would mean that deep groundwater that emerges here would be quite ecologically significant because maybe it still keeps it moist above P2
maybe.
And in P2 during the summer.
So you would rather you left this as maybe it will, and hopefully wetland P2 will remain hydrated. This is how you want to leave this so that 5 years down the line.
I think we have pretty good evidence compared to what we normally have for a caber, to be honest.
No,
move on.
You don't have good evidence. You don't have good evidence.
Okay,
Mr.
agree
Mr.
to disagree.
Geckos. You don't.
I know you don't think so. Let's go to another topic. Well, I do just want to go back and look at a couple of maps. So let's go back to foundational documents, and I'll have to reshare. Share. Give me a second. This one. Okay, do you see my screen now?
Yes.
Well, this isn't the page I want you to look at anyway. This is the other page. But I think well, one page we can look at is 784, PDF 784. It's F17. It's just one of the maps. And pretty faint, but you can see wetland P2 here, right? Just barely. You see that?
No, I actually don't see it at all. I'm sorry.
Let me zoom
It's
in a
not
little bit
even
more.
faint.
Okay, I'll zoom in a little bit
Oh,
more.
okay. There it is. There it is. Yes.
Okay, there you go. All right, so this is exhibit F17. It's PDF page 784. And on remand, I mean, you listened and you participated in the last hearing, right? The
Yes.
before Ms. Marshall, Examiner Marshall.
Yes.
And you recall one of the agreed upon issues was the parties, the county, the applicant, the appellant all agreed to there would be buffer for wetland P2 would not be less than 100 feet. And I know what your position is, but you remember that?
Yes.
Okay. And so in an attempt to comply with that condition, this spine road was moved east, right?
Yes,
And not
it's
just the
my
spine, not
understanding.
just the spine road, but the corresponding pedestrian pathway as well. It was all moved east. And so
Yes.
before it was moved east, the actual road was, and when I say road, I mean like this paved road and the pedestrian pathway actually were less than 100 feet from the edge of wetland P2, right?
Yeah, they were 85. I believe it was 85 feet.
Yep. But now, as you can see, the actual road and pedestrian pathway are 117 feet away if you don't count the fill, right? I know
If
you
you
want to
don't
count the
count.
fill, and we'll talk about the fill in a minute, but if you don't count the fill, the actual road surface and the pedestrian pathway are not just 100 feet away, they're 117 feet away, right?
Yes.
Okay. And technically, I mean, the way the law is written, this area, this 17 feet is not, we don't call that buffer, we call that impervious surface setback. And there's some slightly different rules and questions that apply to impervious surface setback than to buffer, right?
Yes.
Okay. That's more of a legal question, whether it meets the definition of impervious surface setback. And then are you familiar? You did look a little bit at 225D. I can pull that back up, but do you know all about 225D anyway? That 19200
You
225D
need
that
to,
I could pull it up if you want,
yeah, you
but
need to
it's
pull
the
it
one
up,
that
please.
says that if you meet the minimum, if there the minimum four steps. Why don't I just pull it up? It's 225D is 129. So see if I had any other questions before I leave this one. Well, I might go back to this one, or I might go back to 818, which is this other one that we've looked at so many times here. But let's look at 225D or 129. Okay, so here's 225D, and I know we are trying to show that in both the buffer and in the setback that any impacts will only be temporary. But if you just look at 225D and how it's written, it doesn't actually say for this that the impacts have to be temporary when you're using 225D. It just says you have to have a mitigation plan that's performed in accordance with specific project mitigation plan requirements. Although our
Well,
mitigation plan does use buffer averaging, and that has its own rules, in any event.
you're cherry picking code, Mr. Gekas. You have to be in compliance with all code. And I know that's sometimes difficult because oftentimes code can be contradictory between one section and another. But the overlying code states that you cannot impact the functions in the buffer beyond what is either equal or improved over the current function of the buffer.
And I know
So
what you're talking
that's
about. I think it's
always
language.
overriding anything else.
Yes, that's from I think that's from 24 to 128. That's from the C, the buffer averaging section, I think is where you're getting that from. The greater provide
Oh,
greater
it's in a
or as
couple of
great functions.
places.
But the thing
Yeah.
is no, I think the code does allow more than one legal justification, and they are alternative justifications. You don't have to meet, like, if you're meeting buffer averaging, you don't necessarily also have to meet those four things in 225D. It's just they're alternative justifications. Maybe you can satisfy all of them, but you don't have to satisfy all of them. You just have to satisfy one of the legal
One of
justifications
them.
for where that road is. If you
I'm
can
gonna.
satisfy any of them, then you've got a legal justification for where that road is, right?
I'm going to object, Ms. Cook. Cook is not a lawyer. And if we're just going to be bickering about what the code means, I would object to that line of questioning.
Okay, let's move on to a different topic then. Yeah, maybe just a little bit. We'll go back to 818. So here we don't have the 17. You can see my screen now, right?
Yes.
And you've talked a few times about how you don't want all the upstream flow to be cut off to P2, but that if there was a French drain here, then that would definitely help that not happen, right?
It would help. It just needs to be designed correctly.
Yeah. And a lot of that water, if it's on this side of the road, it's going to be clean water coming down from here. So it's going to go be clean and then go under and then come out,
Again,
right?
I would object. Now, Mr. Getches is just sort of speculating about what's clean water and what's not clean water. If he could point us to a point in the record that talks about whether that water is going to be clean, if he's going to testify to it.
No, just common sense. I mean, if it's coming, if it's before it even gets to the road, if it's going into a French drain.
Again, I don't. It seems like we're blending the roles of scientist and lawyer. If you're going to say it's clean, I don't know what the relevance is, but could you point us to something in the record that addresses that topic? That would be my objection. I'll stop there.
Okay, and well,
It's a hypothetical question, so
No, it
yeah,
wasn't. You were saying, well, I'll stop.
well, yeah, just make it a hypothetical question, Mr. Getches.
Okay, so hypothetically, if the French drain is right here and much of the water is coming from uphill down and going into the French drain, unless it's still dirty from roads over here, wouldn't you? Well, that's where I was going with that. Any thoughts on that?
It would just depend on what the source of the water was, what potential pollutants are, and how the French drain is designed. You'd have to design the French drain to filter and remove any potential toxicants from the flows. So I can't really answer that because I'm not an engineer. What I believe is being asked is that this French drain, once it's detailed on paper, is designed adequately to both allow for treatment and to allow for sufficient flows to not dewater wetland P2.
And the reason that this is going back to that, how you were saying that it wasn't a 100-foot buffer because of the fill, and that it was really more like an 85 or 87 foot buffer because of this fill right here. Is that right?
Because of the way that it's being proposed to mitigate for that additional 15 feet plus, yes. Again, that can be.
Yeah, so the answer is yes. That's why you were saying that we hadn't met that 100 foot condition, is because you don't view, because you're considering this little bit of fill here as a permanent impact. Is that right?
As the mitigation plan currently describes what will be done in that area, that's correct.
But if it isn't, if the examiner's persuaded by the applicant's experts who testified about attempts and mitigations to try to get the fill to mimic the functions of the pre construction buffer, then you would agree that this would satisfy, this 100 foot would satisfy the requirement on remand, right?
For habitat functions for the buffer.
Right.
I still would, you know, without the road redesign, I wouldn't agree. But if both those things are done and the designs are adequate, I would say that would hopefully mitigate as much as we possibly could.
And then also, I mean, in theory, if there was construction way out over here, which is outside the 200 feet, that could in theory affect wetland P2, but it would definitely not be standard in your experience that there would be ongoing monitoring required of a wetland for construction that was outside of even the standard buffer, right? Even if in theory it could be impacted by that, depending on what the construction was.
Yeah, because that's legally, that's all that's required. You know,
right.
I'm an ecologist, and I would tell you that 300 foot buffer is what's really needed, but legally that would be in compliance. We'd have no ability to say anything, but I can tell you from my experience that I see that impacting building outside of the legal area does impact wetlands and streams all the time, because the buffers aren't sufficient in what we apply in our codes. That's what it is, what it is. You
right.
Should go to Oklahoma.
That's all for me. No further questions.
Okay. All right. Mr. Telligen, do you think you'll be finished tomorrow with your rebuttal? Are we getting nearing the end, or what's the time frame here?
So I still have Mr. Libisher and Dr. Rosin, and I am hopeful. Well, I guess I'm cautiously hopeful, but pessimistically skeptical, given how things are going, that we will be able to finish tomorrow.
Oh, okay.
So
okay.
I mean, I only have two, but I think it would be wise for us to set another day or half day after tomorrow.
Or did we not schedule out further than that? Let me check.
There is a full day of the hearing tomorrow.
Yeah, tomorrow's a full day. Right. Yeah.
Yes, but so, given that this took, you know, 8 hours, I just don't know.
Okay. Well, I guess we can schedule, if we don't make it tomorrow, we can schedule that additional day at the end. One of the reasons I was asking actually was so people would know whether they need to be prepared to do a verbal close tomorrow or a written one. From prior comments, it sounded like people were thinking of a written. Is that pretty much what everyone has in mind here? So we all know that people don't need to be prepared to do a verbal closing tomorrow. Is that correct?
It was my understanding.
Yeah. Yeah, I see Ms. Koski and Mr. Gekas as well. Okay, good. Yeah, so we don't have to worry about being ready for that. And I take it then Dr. Cook can come back tomorrow morning for a redirect. I'm assuming you need to do that, Mr. Telligen, is that right?
Are you available tomorrow morning, Dr. Cook?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So we'll reconvene tomorrow at 9 and do the redirect with Dr. Cook and do the other two witnesses. And if we don't get done by the end of the day, we'll schedule a third one. But and closings will be in writing, and we'll schedule, we'll put together a briefing schedule for that as well. So anything else before we wrap it up today? Or No, I think we got it well in hand. So, okay, we'll see you tomorrow at 9 o'clock then.
Okay.
Thank you.